Okay, it being 6 o'clock, I call this session of the Blaine City Council to order. May we have a moment of silence, please?
Will you join me for the Pledge of Allegiance? Sherry, roll call, please.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Olison.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Paul Greeno.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson.
Here.
Clark Cotner.
Here.
Harry Robinson requested to be excused tonight.
I'll make a motion to accept that.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to excuse Harry. Shall we vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry 6-0. We have no recognitions and awards tonight. Do we have any audience participation?
Mr. Mayor, may I ask that the council speak into their microphones tonight? Some of them are twisted away. It's important to do that.
Tossed one, too. Okay, no audience participation? Whoops, we do have audience participation. Okay. Martin Cognac, would you please come forward? State your name and address, please.
Good evening. My name is Martin Cognac. I live at 9525 Semiahmoo Parkway, A304 in Blaine. Thanks for allowing me to speak tonight. Distinguished Council, if any of you on the Council or in the membership of Blaine go to United Church of Christ, St. Anne's Catholic Church, or Grace Lutheran Church, you might be interested in this. For about 30 years, the churches of Blaine have solicited volunteer folks from the congregations to ring the bell and man the little tripod pot for the Salvation Army in front of the post office to solicit donations to the Salvation Army during the Christmas season. Three churches this year, United Church of Christ, St. Anne's Catholic Church, and Grace Lutheran Church, for about a week, each church, for only 2 hours a day. 2 hours a day, about 2 or 3 weeks before Christmas, okay? So the letter comes out from the attorney on behalf, I presume, of the Salvation Army, requesting solicitation for volunteers. And all the churches say fine. And then last Sunday, we're presented with a letter from the same attorney, presumably on behalf of the Salvation Army, saying that I regret to advise you that local participation in this Salvation Army thing has got to be canceled for the year because it conflicts with the post office manual section 124.54, which prohibits, among other things, the solicitation of alms on post office property. Okay. So I looked up all the 124.54 things that it prohibits, and sure enough, it's in there. The regulations prohibit a whole bunch of stuff, including solicitation for alms. So the churches have said, okay, we'll cancel our participation in this Salvation Army thing this year. Well, evidently, Our Blaine postmaster, I believe Willie Curtis, I'm not sure, has taken it upon himself to start, you know, obeying the regulations or enforcing the regulations. But it begs the question, why after 30 years have they started now trying to enforce this regulation? 30 years. It's a small town, folks. And a broader issue, I think, if the Northern Light is here, is whether or not the post offices at Linden, Ferndale, and Custer are having the same issue. Why now, if we haven't done it for 30 years? So that's the background. All I want to ask the city is that if we back up 20 feet further from the post office door, we'll be on the sidewalk, which is now city property. It's not federal property, and the post office couldn't have a say one way or the other. My question to the council is whether or not we could just do it on the sidewalk in front of the post office. It's that simple. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cognac. Mr. City Manager? Mr. City Manager?
I'd have to defer to Michael. Maybe you could answer that without looking at the code.
I wish I could without looking at the code, but I feel like I might be in the same situation as the postmaster and find a code that said that it isn't allowed, so I wouldn't want to go and tell you that it's all right. But I suspect it likely is fine on city property. That type of thing happens fairly frequently. Okay. I don't know absolutely.
Then let's do this. Let's ask the city manager to prepare a definitive answer for when do you need the answer by, Mr. Cognac? Yes, I understand.
Well, I'm sure the folks that are involved in this would appreciate an answer as soon as possible. We've already had lists of people signing up for certain days and certain times. People work and they're involved with the holidays and so on and so forth. So as soon as possible, it would be nice. Otherwise, it's canceled. The money for this collection for the Salvation Army locally, I believe, mostly stays local. So that's a little economic consideration, you know, in view of the food bank things and all that. Okay. So
then let's do this. Let's say that the city will give you a call one way or the other as soon as possible.
So we could get back to you tomorrow. Did you leave your number with somebody?
Don't see it here.
Martin Cognac's in the phone book.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Well, and I'm the only one.
Okay.
That's right. I Googled my name once, and I'm the only one in the world with this name.
Thank you, Mr. Cognac.
Martin, if you read my email that I sent out today about the other thing, I think you already know my opinion. I am sick and tired of political correctness, and I think we should do whatever we can to make this happen for you.
Our next speaker is Mr. John Gillifoud, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly.
Speaking in support of the previous speaker who has outlined my concerns precisely, so I'm showing support for him.
Thank you.
And as he pointed out, the money is spent locally without regard to anything except need in the community. People who are hungry, people who need support, people who need warmth and support, the money is spent here, and it's for all of us. And it's not just the people in Blaine who contribute to this. I've done it two Christmases out on the run. Had a great time. Met some strangers that are now friends. It's great. Once in a while, you'll have somebody that just doesn't want to contribute. But 90% of the time, it's a good morning well spent. I invite everybody else here to come and ring the bell. But it is for local people, children, people who need support, and that's where it gets spent. Without regard to sex, racial origins, anything. It just gets spent for people who need support. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Todd?
Thank you, Council. Joel Todd, 8226 Birch Bay Drive, Director of the Boys and Girls Club. I'm just addressing you guys today in regards to next year's budget. Not familiar with the whole story, but I do know that The Boys and Girls Club funding was cut a little bit last year due to the closure of the resort and taxes with that. And I'm just here asking you guys to consider returning that funding to the 2012 level, which was only about $5,000 difference. But as you know, every penny counts with us. And this year, in November, we're already seeing an average of 90 kids walk over to the Boys and Girls Club every day. We've had 5 days of over 100 kids, which last year we only had one. So that even though the funding has decreased, the demand for our services has increased greatly and keeps getting more and more. Quick little update, too, on the Boys and Girls Club. You know, a couple years ago we had 10 basketball teams. This year we have 20, which is 150 kids playing entry-level basketball. This isn't AAU or, you know, super competitive. This is learning how to have fun and be a teammate. We also added 2 girls volleyball teams this past fall, which was a huge success. We've never done that in this community. And then also our auction, which some of you guys were able to attend, was a great success. I think mostly, well, and a great deal in part because we hosted it at the Senior Center and Boys and Girls Club, so our overhead was very, very little, which really put everybody's donation dollars right into helping the kids. So I just wanted to address that, and hopefully you guys consider returning that funding to the 2012 level. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Todd. Mr. Davidson.
Hi, I'm Eric Davidson. I live at 590 G Street here in Blaine. First, I want to say I didn't realize that the Boys and Girls Club was so active. That's fantastic. So I'd love to talk to you after this, if possible, about some opportunities. Today I want to talk to the City Council about two things that are both interrelated. First thing are the sidewalks and lack of street lights on my street. I'm here on behalf of the Numbered and Lettered Streets Neighborhood Association, and we want to talk about sidewalks on my street and lack of street lights. And then the second thing I want to talk about is a committee to help steer funds or a bond to potentially raise money for street improvements, sidewalk improvements throughout Blaine. But first I'll start with specifically my block. I've got some pictures here that I want to show the City Council that I've emailed to the Public Works Department already a couple of months ago, and I wanted you to take a look. And as everyone has said, I know budget is very tight for sidewalk improvements, and I was just looking at some of the information that we have for sidewalk improvements for next year. But as you can see by some of those pictures, there's a real need on the 500 block of G Street for sidewalk improvement. The 500 block does not have sidewalks on the south side, the sidewalks that they have on the north side, as you can see, they're in pretty good disrepair. And that street also does not have a street light in the middle of it, and it's very dark. And right now, the only thing that people can do to walk on that street safely is walk in the street, and that creates a problem at night because the sidewalks at night are not, they're not good to walk on. And on the south side, there are no sidewalks. So I just wanted to address that issue with the City Council. Some of the things that our organization would like to present to you, would like to do, is potentially work with the city to procure materials for us to have a work party to work at our own process, where we don't want to come here and say, make us a priority. We want to come here and we want to be true partners with the city to say, what can we do to help the city out to make our community better? So that's the first thing we want to do specifically for our sidewalks. And the second thing is, there's a lot of committees in town, great, worthwhile committees, planning committee, parks and cemeteries, great things. I think we need one for the streets and the sidewalks. I know that there's a bond that's coming due fairly soon, a 10-year bond, and a lot of that money's been spent, and I think it might be time to talk about another bond. And I don't want to ask the council, unless that's something they feel like they need to do, I don't want to ask the council to raise taxes. I want to ask the city to do that, if that's something that the city wants to do, that the people of the city. So I just want that discussion to start, and I just want that discussion to start. So,
thank you, Mr. Davidson. The study session started at 5 this evening, addressed precisely that issue.
Okay.
So I think that you and we are saying pretty much the same thing.
Super.
Anything further?
Okay. No, that's it. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to address the council? Seeing none, we move to written communications.
Mr. Mayor, if I might, I think I can address Mr. Cognac's question at this
Please.
Point, if that'd be all right. Just so that he doesn't have to wait until tomorrow and have any delay. Raven and I spent a few moments looking at the code, and Title 12 does allow for solicitation on the public streets and sidewalks, provided that there's not an obstruction or a public safety risk created by it, as long as also it's for nonprofit solicitation. So it appears that it's fine. Raven's going to take a look at the sidewalk in front of the post office just to ensure that it is, in fact, public right-of-way and that it is, in fact, wide enough that there isn't an obstruction created by the little kettle tripod. But I think that it's all set. We'll take a look, and if there's a problem, we'll get in touch with Mr. Cognac.
Fine. Thank you. Seldom has the city been so responsive. Okay. Written communications, please.
We received a letter dated November 15th from Ruth Cantillon regarding a Costco store in Blaine, and a letter dated November 18th from Larry and Pat Van Wonseel, thank you, regarding a Costco store in Blaine.
Okay, it's time now to continue the public hearing on the 2014 budget. Is there anybody here who would like to speak to the 2014 budget? Seeing none, I declare the public hearing closed. And let's move to the consent agenda. The consent agenda tonight has two items, approval of bills in the amount of $289,000 and the approval of the November 12, 2013 council meeting minutes. Do I have a motion?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Shall we vote? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries 6-0. Council action items. Our first item tonight is Resolution 1623-13. Adopting preliminary population and employment allocations for 2016 planning. That would be Mr. Jones.
Yes, sir, Mr. Greeno, it is. You have seen this a couple times already as it developed, and so I'm not going to belabor it or get into too great of detail. I do believe this is the first time you've seen the recommendation from the Planning Commission on this item. We hadn't crunched all the numbers at their point, so their recommendation, as you can see, is a little more generalized, but it's supportive of the proposal that is before you. And I just would remind you that this is a recommendation to Whatcom County Planning Commission, which will then be forwarded up to their county council to develop a preliminary allocation decision on population and employment for the 2016 comprehensive plan update process. So essentially it will allocate new residents and job growth to the various cities in the county and the county itself, the unincorporated areas of the county, for the next 20 years, beginning in 2016. Some of what I know at this point is that the other cities, including Bellingham, have essentially all requested that the county use the high population and employment projections. And some have requested their full allotment or more, as we are. So I should tell you that while we're asking for a substantial allocation, in both employment and population. It is possible there may not be enough to go around based on the numbers that they're looking at. So we may have to share, so to speak. But I think definitely we should continue to ask for these numbers, primarily because we have room for all of these people within our city limits, so we're not really asking for additional UGA or anything like that. I would also point out that because we do have so much room in our area, within our city limits and incorporated city limits, it is possible that through this process we may have our UGA turn into a UGA reserve or a provisional UGA kind of thing. That really isn't something we can control with this allocation request, but I think it is important for you to recognize that our UGA, our city limits has so much capacity that even with the request that we're making, there's still plenty of room. Again, because we've spent a lot of time at other meetings on this, I won't dig into all the numbers, but if you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer.
Before we go to a discussion, shall we get a motion on the floor?
I move we accept. How do you want us to read resolution 16-27-13?
Do we have a second?
I don't know what he said.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Now it's time for discussion. Clark?
I'll second it, but I have a question.
Please.
This is kind of like shoot for the moon and settle for what you get.
Is that a question?
Yes, that's it. Is that
a little bit? We aren't able to control.
Who divvies it up? The county.
The county. We're not able to control what we get.
Let's go for it.
So we are asking for a fairly high number, but all the other cities have asked for the high numbers. That's the tough part. If we had had other cities say, you know, we don't really want to see a lot of population growth, it'd be easy to get these big numbers, but it may be more challenging.
Okay.
Now,
further questions?
Thank you,
Dennis.
Michael, under the city profile, you're talking about the U.S. Canadian border crossing. That should be west of the city.
Yes, it should be. Okay. I'll make that correction before we send it so no one thinks we're east of Detroit.
You probably never know the difference.
Further questions? Seeing none, shall we vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. On to Ordinance 13-2443, adopting Title 17.150, Marijuana Control. Mr. Jones?
Yes, sir. This is also me. One of the more unique things you may do in your career as politicians. And certainly one of the more unique things I will probably do in my career as a planner is to bring before you a recommendation for formalizing and legalizing locations of marijuana processing, production, and retail sales facilities in the city of Blaine. It's consistent with the Liquor Control Board's regulations, and it adds a few of our own elements to it. And it essentially is enacting I-502 under the Liquor Control Board rules and regulations, primarily so that we can answer questions at the counter and on the phone when people call and ask us what is the status of potential licensing of these facilities in Blaine. Of course, because marijuana was illegal in Washington State up until, well, about a year ago, there were no rules for this. So now that it's been legalized, we have a set of rules here. And again, essentially, it just complies with the state requirements. What we've decided and what we've worked through the Planning Commission with and have brought to you before in sort of a preliminary status was that the production of marijuana or cultivation would be permitted only indoors, and that would be a manufacturing use, be only permitted in manufacturing zones. The processing, which would be shredding the marijuana, baking it into products, infusing it into products, is also a manufacturing use, and that would happen only in manufacturing zones. And then the retail sale of marijuana would be permitted in retail zones. One important thing that's included in the state law and is included here as well, but it's state law, so it doesn't matter if we write it or not, is that you can't do any of those things within 1,000 feet of certain sensitive uses, which includes schools and playgrounds and other such things. And that's really about it. There are a couple provisions in here that are recommended by the Association of Washington Cities that help to reduce liability for people issuing licenses, such as myself or Sherry, and also for the city as a whole, basically. But otherwise, it's fairly straightforward. Any questions on any of this for me?
Michael, on the definition, when we talk about indoors, that section, this eliminates greenhouses, is that correct?
Yes, it does.
And there, then down, the next one down where it talks about marijuana and weed, what's the difference between the first statement and the second?
The difference between the first sentence in G and the second sentence in G?
Yeah.
Primarily, I think the difference is that it is it's creating exceptions in the second sentence, such as the stem doesn't count as part of the plant, or the root doesn't count as part of the cannabis, the marijuana, even though it's clearly part of the same organism. It's not part of the usable component.
But when they get into the oil,
Right, and that's the reason why exactly. The fiber is hemp. It's not usable cannabis. It doesn't have the cannabinoids that would create mind-altering effects for people. And the marijuana, or the cannabis cakes, apparently, it's not, unlike a brownie, is something that would be like a feed product for an animal. It's a like a protein seed thing, and so it's the other part of the product that is not for the same use.
Have you researched this thoroughly?
I was waiting for that question. Not while working on this, sir.
If we vote for this, are we exempt from federal law?
That's one of the provisions in here, is we're trying to reduce our liability. No, we're not exempt from federal law.
Public transit centers, are there any in Blaine for the buses?
There are no public transit centers in Blaine, technically, but there might be. It's just part of those are the items that are protected locations.
Mr. Jones, what are the implications of not adopting a regulation for marijuana?
Not adopting a regulation for marijuana would leave it entirely up to my interpretation. So that's the basic issue there, is because we don't have rules and it is now a legal thing under the state's provisions, it would be up to staff to interpret. And
to interpret the state regulations as it pertains to our city.
Right, and what would the city want or not want, and how is it potentially affect us? So okay. I would prefer that we have a set of rules rather than it being entirely up to interpretation.
Okay.
It seemed like we'd be a lot more facing a lot more legal issues if we don't have something written down as an ordinance to follow.
Is that true? You think we...
Well, it's a question, a legal matter is really a question for an attorney, but certainly I would feel more comfortable if I was implementing the rules of the city of Blaine rather than just interpreting state law.
Okay. That's not my question. Didn't you, early on when we were discussing this, didn't you have a map of the city with potential circles around where it was not allowed and where it was allowed, as it exists today with the buildings that are in place today, schools, churches, whatever. Mm-hmm.
And I can show you that if you like. We do have that presentation. It'll just take me a moment here to pull it up.
Okay, are there any further questions before we do that?
Yeah, one.
Dennis.
The letter from Clean Air, Mark Alfredson.
Yes.
Has that really been a problem?
Apparently, yes. I'm aware from talking with a planner in Bellingham, where they have a collective garden for medical marijuana production. It's in Fairhaven, of all places, in an office building that you can smell it in the alley, and people in the building have complained and tried to get the person evicted. Oddly, they've spoken to the city about that rather than the landlord. But it's enough of an issue that the city has gotten complaints on it. And from what I understand, that's not unique. It's the plants are very odoriferous when they're in blossom. Yes, and that's the regulations that we have, is we have nuisance regulations. We also have performance standards in our manufacturing district. So if you're creating an off-site odor issue, there's a way to deal with that other than just a nuisance as a performance standard, where a panel is selected, city council, planning commission, property owner, and they essentially evaluate the problem.
One last question from Dennis.
As far as Blaine is concerned, there will be no repayment.
No, that's not true, sir. I think what you're probably looking at is the outlets that are assigned by the Liquor Control Board based upon population in the various counties. Those cities which have populations of 10,000 or greater have a specific allocation, but any other area is entitled to have the unallocated licenses issued there. So if I remember my numbers correctly off the top of my head, I think there were 15 or 13 permitted in Whatcom County as a whole. Six of those are allocated to Bellingham, one to Linden, one to Ferndale, and then the remainder can be anywhere else in Whatcom County, and Blaine is part of the anywhere else in Whatcom County. So even though you don't see one allocated specifically to Blaine, it could be here.
And as far as where those could be located, is that different than the rules for the manufacturing process as far as distance?
Not distance, but because it's a different zone, they would be zones where retail is permitted, but they would still need to be at least 1,000 feet away from any of those sensitive uses.
Further questions? Michael, do you have the map for us?
I do. There's a series of different maps. I'll run through these quickly, just a moment. So this is a presentation that I showed to you way back when we started discussing this before we went to Planning Commission. And this slide shows slide shows the manufacturing districts, or districts where manufacturing is permitted. And then this slide shows the buffers, the 1,000-foot buffers around sensitive uses. And then this slide shows the area that's outside those buffers. So you can see there's a fair amount of the manufacturing area that is outside of those buffers. Similar slide for retail. That set of slides, just to go back real quick, sorry, would relate to production and processing, so those two activities, which can be in the same facility. Under state law, retail cannot be in the same facility, and it cannot be owned by the same person or corporation. And then this would be zoning districts where retail is permitted. This is 1,000-foot buffers around sensitive uses, and these are the areas outside of the 1,000-foot buffer. And as I mentioned on that day, it does become quite specific where with this it actually turns out that, like, on one side of the street it's permitted, on the other side of the street it's...
So the pink areas...
The little areas in pink or outlined in red are the areas where there could be a retail facility if someone asked for a license and were granted one. And by the way, I do want to say these were preliminary maps. We will evaluate this on a sort of a case-by-case basis when a request comes through for a permit, because the sensitive uses potentially change. A new one could open and the map might change.
Do you currently have applications?
We do not have any applications. We have received several phone calls, but we do not have any applications.
Okay. I don't think we have a motion on the floor yet. Would anybody care to make a motion?
I saw a move that we... approve ordinance 13-2843.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I have a second. And I would like to thank the staff for the extensive research that you've done on this subject.
Is there any further discussion to come before us?
Mayor Pro Tem, would that be to also waive the second reading on that?
Yes. Oops, Charlie made the motion.
Yes.
I'm going to vote yes under protest.
Don't do it for me.
Out of sympathy for Mr. Jones, because obviously this is something cities are forced into, whether they want it on a community level or not. It's a state law, unfortunately, and it's something we're going to have to comply with, whether Mr. Jones makes that decision or we have some rules in place. So.
May I just clarify? I don't want to have words put into my mouth, and I don't think that's what you meant to do, but I want to be really clear that the recommendation I'm bringing to you is a recommendation that we developed with the Planning Commission, and you could actually make it illegal in Blaine. You don't have to do this. Just this complies with the state law.
So you're saying that on a citywide basis, we can make it illegal citywide?
Okay. And you could also declare a moratorium to study it longer.
What does that entail?
Well, it would
coming up with a law.
At this point, it would entail sending it back to the Planning Commission with a remand to consider that. They'd hold another public hearing and evaluate that.
Okay, I guess I have a misunderstanding then.
There are provisions that we can make land use controls related to it in the state law.
Dennis?
Okay.
Michael Oates, 7 remaining retail sites. How would those be first come, first served?
Yeah, they're issued by the Liquor Control Board, and I don't know all the specifics related to them, but from what I understand, yes, it's first come, first serve. In fact, all 13, or I believe it's 15 actually, all of them are first come, first serve. So whoever comes in and gets their permits in the Liquor Control Board office first are first come, first serve. And then where they locate, where they physically land, is really based upon the market. And there isn't anything that I'm aware of in the state law that says, for example, you couldn't have 3 marijuana retailers on the same block. Now, for obvious reasons, that might not make any sense at all from a market perspective, from a business owner's perspective, but theoretically you could. There's a saturation point. As I understand it, that's correct, yes. Bellingham can have a total of 6. You couldn't have the other 7 there.
Do we have further discussion? Sherry, let's do a roll call vote on this one.
Charlie Hawkins?
Yes.
Dennis Oleson?
Yes.
Bonnie Onion?
No.
Paul Greeno?
Yes.
Steve Lawrenson?
Yes.
Clark Cotner?
Yes.
So that's 5-1.
Thank you. Let's see. Next, we have a bid award for the Lighthouse Point Basement Waterproofing Project. That would be...
Well, it's a lot of work coming to you with one page of a request, but essentially, probably about a year ago, a crew took me on a tour downstairs in our state-of-the-art plant and showed me all the water pouring across the bottom of the floor. And essentially, as a cost-saving measure during construction, which is very typical, they elected to keep the sheet pile that was used for shoring as one of the vertical walls, and where that sheet pile meets the concrete, we're having groundwater intrusion. Came to my attention because the staff was asking me to sign a purchase order to do some repair work, and my experience with this kind of thing is you repair there and it pops out somewhere else, and so I wanted to do something a little more comprehensive, and I also felt like, because this was very much related to the original construction, that USDA rural development should pay for it, since that particular funding source is still available to us for a very, very short period of time. Because they're very eager to close that out, as you can imagine. So we ended up doing a study using the design engineer of record for the facility. He brought in an expert that deals with these types of issues, and he wrote a report, essentially determined, with one exception, that there is no risk to the facility. It is strictly cosmetic. So the major risk to the facility is a staining on the floor. Yes,
when you say there's no risk, we're going to be 100% reimbursed?
Yes. Yeah, this is entirely grant funded. I'm just giving you a little bit of background.
Let's hold our questions until after the presentation.
Thank you. So in any event, we came up with a, as I mentioned, they did a report. They had a couple of recommendations in the report. And I forwarded those to our grant agency, essentially with a recommendation to just do one of the three measures that they were recommending. And he came back with, let's do all three. So I've been in the process of getting this competitively bid now for a couple of months. And finally, we received interest from a company called Combined Construction in Mocotillo. We verified their qualifications and determined that the bid is responsive. It is 100% reimbursed by USDA Rural Development, and we request your approval to award to Combined Construction in the amount of $34,720, which is less than the engineer's estimate.
Shall we get a motion on the floor?
I'll move that we still approve.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Shall we discuss it?
I have one question.
Dennis?
Is the work going to be inside or the outside?
The work is all going to be on the inside of the building with the exception of there's one area where they poured some concrete for one of the exterior walls, and we're getting some intrusion through that wall that is in a more critically, a structurally critical area. So that's the only recommendation I was recommending. And that is going to involve drilling through the exterior to get concrete in there because it's a very hard to reach spot. So they're actually going to have to drill a hole and patch it. But other than that, you're not going to see any work. That work is in the back of the facility, so I'll have to work with Michael on timing and so forth. I think, you know, the goal is to get it done this winter because this is the time where you could see the worst of it happening. So.
But they don't need to have a dry situation.
No. In fact, these products that they use are activated by water.
Buddy?
Is there any kind of warranty on the work?
We did put in a maintenance warranty. I don't think that they can guarantee it's going to keep all of the groundwater intrusion out of the facility. I think that the idea of the maintenance warranty is if, you know, some seal breaks or the area that I'm referring to where they have to drill through the wall, you know, that's an area we'll keep an eye on for a year, make sure it's not rusting or whatever like that.
And has this been coming in for a long time? Or?
It's been happening since the original construction. In fact, the one area that did have the structural concern, the contractor actually came up with a creative piped, he actually piped an area of that wall into a floor drain. So there's literally a pipe coming horizontally across the floor. And there are injection ports where they have previously injected grout into the building. So it's been a problem from the original construction, and that's why USDA was willing to fund it.
Was that a faulty kind of thing, or is this just typical?
It's typical. I would not go to Stellar J and say you caused this. It's anytime you're dealing with dissimilar materials, you have this risk. It's a risk that we took as a measure to save money. And like I said, for the most part, the engineered study that we did indicates this is primarily cosmetic. There is no major structural concern to the building with this one exception spot that I've mentioned. For me, it is a safety element. I don't want my staff having to slip on a floor and things like that. So. It's not only cosmetic to me, it's an issue of safety.
Right. Charlie?
Is it fresh water or salt water?
I would say it's probably diluted salt water. There's definitely a white stain.
It's down.
Oh, yeah. And the facility is below sea level, right. So that makes all kinds of sense.
Further questions? Seeing no further questions, shall we vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Moving on, we have the Gateway Development request for qualifications.
Good evening, Council. I'm here to ask some questions to the Council regarding the next steps in the request for qualifications for the development of the Gateway parcel. So I have a PowerPoint presentation. I've got extra copies. I gave you a copy of those which are in front of you, and attached to that is a draft of the request for qualifications that we've been working on. So I'm going to give you a little background that's in my presentation, and I'll just review kind of briefly what our background summary information was in your council packet as well as we go through this. So just a little bit of background. I'm not going to go through all of it, but if you recall, back in October, the Council approved the Hebert Report. That's something that had been ongoing for quite a long time. At the end of the day, there was a recommendation to develop the site for several different types of uses, advanced manufacturing, medical, some of those kinds of things. We took that information back to the Economic Development Committee. Some of you on the dais are in that committee, and you can speak to this. And I began drafting a request for qualifications and also as a request for proposal. We weren't quite sure which direction we want to go. And frankly, I've done a lot of research, and this is a very unique project. There isn't not a lot of other cities doing this kind of activity. And I think the reason for that is, number one, a lot of cities have enough resource. They may have their own internal economic development organizations, not unlike what the Port of Bellingham has. They have an economic development arm. Or they just have their properties that they decide to sell. And so this is a bit different than that. You know, Hebert gave us a report that basically says you've got a kind of a wonderful opportunity to do some unique things. So as I worked on trying to develop how to go forward and met with the Economic Development Committee, it seemed like there's a range of options that we can take a look at. And so I'll talk a little bit about that and kind of come up tell you why I think the request for qualifications might be the best direction to go. So on a continuum from do nothing to do everything, the city doesn't have enough money to do everything, and it can't afford to do nothing. Something has to happen. So along that continuum, there's things like you could just sell the land. And you've had for sale signs out on the property, and we get calls, you know, somewhat regularly, once or twice a month, for someone who wants to buy it for a gas station, or they might have an interest in some kind of a retail facility. That's certainly far from what the Hebert Report recommended. So, and those solutions certainly aren't going to achieve some of the goals that the Council's told me that they have. So going along that same line, you could maybe find a developer that might be interested in taking it over, but again, you're selling the property. I think what came out of the Hebert Report in my mind is that the city, if it's going to develop it in ways that it wants to achieve the goals it wants to get, it's going to have to get behind it. It's going to have to work a system of some sort. And in my mind, the private sector does that the best. You know, I've been around this work for many, many years. There's things that we do really well. The city does really great with regulations and permitting. We do well with, you know, providing public safety services, public works operations. We're not particularly good in some of the areas where the private sector does really well. And so I think we need to reach out to the public or the private sector to help us do that. So what I've been looking at then is trying to figure out a way to do that. And I think a request for qualifications takes us to the next step. It's not necessarily the ultimate solution, but it certainly will get us to the next step. And then that means what do we do to get there? So I drafted a request for qualifications. I'm not asking you to necessarily read that tonight or study it. I just gave it to you for background. We're going to come back one more time when you give me some direction tonight about what our next steps are so I can finalize it and get it out hopefully by the end of the year. So one of the things that we're looking at is the structure to make this system work. Again, we could sell the land and turn it over to a private entity, and they're going to do whatever the zoning allows them to do, whatever their best efforts would be for, you know, getting a builder, or maybe they build it themselves, getting tenants to fill the space. That's, in my mind, kind of an iffy proposition, and frankly, you've had the property for sale for a couple of years. And really have had some, as I mentioned, opportunities to sell it, probably not at the best price or at the best use. So in my mind, there needs to be a pretty strong relationship between what the city's trying to accomplish and someone helping us to do that. And to me, that's a private-public partnership. I call that the P3 in my presentation for you tonight. What that means is that the city would go out, do a request for qualifications based upon some very specific things we want our partner to do. They have to have access to the market. They have to have a real estate background. They have to have experience and knowledge and success developing properties. They have to be interested in our project. I think they need to have capacity to find financing for a project and have the same vision and sense of goals that the council would have for that. Now, why would they do that? What would be the motivation? So I'll talk about that in a minute. So in my mind, it's a long-term relationship with a group. Long-term being 3 to 5 years. You recall Hebert's report. He's suggesting about 3 to 5 years for this thing to come to fruition. I think that's correct. So we're talking about a relationship with a firm with the capacity to do something with us on a very regular basis on behalf of the city, but also on behalf of themselves. They're a private enterprise. They have to make money, and to be able to do that, we have to show them where that can be done. So in my mind, then, it needs to be a relationship that has capacity, as it's a partnership, and they're doing things that the city can't do with our agreement that they're going to do that. And we're in our partnership in helping them do that. So it's not just a passive role that we're playing. We're actively involved with them doing those kinds of things. So the idea, then, is to do the request for qualifications, get some responses back, have the committee start looking at those qualifications, hopefully tightening the circle a little bit and coming up with hopefully 5 or 6 qualified firms that we can start interviewing to find out which one best serves our goals and how the city can serve their goals. The problem, of course, is how do you pay for it all? Whereas the city doesn't have money. You just heard a request from citizens to start replacing sidewalks. A big part of this initiative is to generate new business in the community. So the money for this obviously comes in the future. I think also the money that pay the consultant has to come from the project based upon their success. So if you did a typical retail sale for a real estate sale, and we just kind of estimated a $5 million transaction at 5% is about $100,000. Well, that's just a transaction. What would it take to someone to come in and actually start working on our behalf? It probably would cost more than that. We don't know what that's going to look like, but there has to be on the partnership incentives for these folks to spend 3 to 5 years working on our behalf. If that doesn't sit well with the council or the community, the only other options you have are to sell it and hope that it might happen, have staff work on the deal. I'm not going to promise that's going to turn out very well. I'm a pretty good city manager. I'm not so good at real estate sales, although I understand it. We just don't have the same capacities as the private sector does. So I think the private sector, again, goes to the solution that we were trying to get to. So I think we're going to have to eventually, when we get down to talking about how this thing is funded, come up with a formula that makes sense. And I don't have a recommendation for you because I don't know what that is yet. We're just learning about this. And when I'm on the internet searching and trying to find that out, there really aren't any or very few examples. We're not giving up, but we're just not quite sure how that might look yet. And I think it's a conversation with that consultant that ultimately we think could do the job for us, and then negotiating with that what that might look like based upon performance. It has to be based on some deliverable. So that's something for you to think about. You need to have that in your minds, because as we go forward on this project, that decision is going to have to be decided upon. And we're going to have to include that in this conversation with the document itself, so they understand, well, what's in it for us? Why would we do this? And, of course, there's lots of different kinds of responses. We're going to get responses, hopefully, from large, deep-pocketed developers who can come in and say, I can do this. We can do this. We have clients, we have tenants, we are ourselves are a business, and we want to start something here and grow around ourselves with new businesses. So this can come in many different places and different forms. Certainly one of our markets that we're going to send this document to is Canada. We've been talking to several people that are up there that are real estate professionals. We've talked to people associated with the city of Surrey. There's been large developments going on there. So we're going to go north of the border and try to solicit up in Canada as well as the United States. So it's going to be a broad net that we're sending out. And hopefully we'll get some qualified folks. There's also potential for some short-term money. Again, we're going to ask a company to come in. We're going to ask them to take some risk, spend some money on helping us develop these properties. I'm expecting that they're going to come back and say, well, you want us to work for 3 years for free? Well, we might want them to do that. That's going to cost more at the other end because they're going to be putting up the money to do it. I'm perfectly okay with that. I'm okay negotiating that. That's how businesses work all the time, right? If you have if you want to put an oil pump or drill oil field, you're going to be spending a lot of upfront money searching for oil, hopefully to have it come out of the ground. So that's not uncommon, but I think there's going to be a discussion about that. Again, it gets back to risk and reward and how much you want to put in that. So you need to keep that in your mind a little bit. I think the agreement has to be explicit. We have to be as clear as possible so we don't find ourselves sideways 5 years from now in a structure and a contract that just isn't working and we owe a bunch of money and so forth. So we need to be really careful. And obviously, many minds at this is going to be better than just one. And we'll be sharing it with our attorney. Michael will look at it. Graven will look at it. You will. Citizens will have a chance to look at it. And certainly our Economic Development Committee would have a big part in how that would look, as well as the interviews with that consultant. So that's one thing I need for you to think about. We'll talk about that more at the end. The next thing I wanted to mention is the configuration of the Economic Development Committee. So we've got a pretty darn good group of folks working with us now. I'm very happy to work with them. I think we need to expand it a bit. You need to have a broader stakeholder at the group at the table than just the folks that we have. Not that they're doing anything wrong, but I think we have, you know, business interests, we have real estate interests, you know, we have citizens, there's city council members there and some staff. You need to have a few other folks. Those folks could include some people that are already on a planning commission, but they're not business or real estate, and they're not staff, and they're not council. It could be an interested party that has been a long time volunteer in the community that, you know, is associated with the Boys and Girls Club or associated with the school. It doesn't really matter too much to me, but I think you need to broaden that group a bit, because when you come back with a proposal and a project, that project's going to drive conversation, it's going to drive controversy potentiality. So you want to be able to say to the community, we had a broad brush. We looked at it from lots of angles, not just from a real estate development or a business or a staff perspective. So whatever that looks like, we need to broaden it, I think. That would be my recommendation to you. I think we certainly need to continue support from Jim Hebert. I'll talk a bit about that more, but he did a lot of work for us. He's still in the game. He's still representing the project. We've talked on the phone. He's willing to be on a personal contract, not with his firm necessarily, but working with us on our project. I think it's a good idea to continue that. The retainer request is for about $1,000 a month for probably a year, depending upon where we are with that project and with who may come forward. Obviously, we're going to continue staff support. There's no doubt about that, but I want to mention that we're going to continue working with that. So again, we're going back to the Economic Development Committee. We have 6 to 7 members. I think we should push it to 10 to 11, 12. And I would just suggest that the council talk a bit about that. Each person can nominate a name, or you could say 2 or 3 people, or you could come back with recommendations. It doesn't necessarily matter to me how we do that, but I think you need to have a few more people just to broaden that stakeholder grouping. It would be even a good idea to have some people who don't want to develop it, because that voice will come forward to you in the future. If you ignore it now, it will come back. So, again, we want to expose it to as many people as possible and get all those comments. And I mentioned here on my slide that you could have commissions, interested people, nonprofit. It doesn't matter to me where that group comes from, as long as you're comfortable recommending them. And you don't even have to agree amongst yourselves. If you have some people, I think that's good to let me know who they might be. I can work with anybody. And I think the Economic Development Committee can work with anybody. very clear about what they want to do. I mentioned Hebert. I think there's a value in having him in the project. He's already been selling the project to us. What I've also seen happen is because he's out with the information, he's committed to it. You heard him in this room when he presented on the 28th. You know, if he were 40 years younger, he'd be in the game with us. What's happening is people are trying to pull him into their projects. We've already seen his name unsolicited, or he didn't agree to it. They just put his name on a project list because they want his name on the project. And he doesn't want his name on the project, but he's very interested in helping us with our project. So I just wanted to continue that conversation. The city is a primary partner. It is the partner with that group. I just want to emphasize this is not a contract where we're signing the document and they go do something. It's not like building a solid waste treatment facility or buying a truck. This is a partnership we're talking about. You need to feel comfortable with that. If you don't, we shouldn't go there. And the difference then, of course, is you could sell the land and you've transferred ownership to somebody else. There's no control over the outcome except for the rules we have in place for the comp plan and zoning and so forth. So you might have some architectural standards. You might have some things that you could actually implement relative to codes, but you're not going to necessarily have too much of a relationship unless you tie up the title with some kind of a requirement. That's going to lower the value of the land. If I were going to buy the land and I knew that I had a constraint on it, it increases my risk, I would drive the price down. So that's an option. Think about it. The do-nothing option is not an option, right? We already know you want to do something. And you don't want us as staff doing it, I don't think. I would not recommend it. So on that continuum, it seemed to me, we need to have a partnership with a firm we can work with. So that's why I'm recommending this. Now, at the end of the day, after we go through this process, we vet it out, we talk about it, we argue about it, it still may not be the right solution. But I think we need to go that route to find that out before we make that decision. And frankly, it could be a surprise to us. It might be a pleasant surprise. We send this out. The most qualified respondent is themselves a deep-pocketed developer who wants to buy the land, who has the same vision that we have, who has the same set of goals and objectives, and says, yeah, I'll be your partner. We'll work on this together. And it still has that flavor, but it's not the same as having someone who has to go out in the field and look for a project or look for tenants. So we're not sure what we're going to get back yet. So I think we need to go through the process to find out if that can actually happen. The timing of this, I think my goal is to get some feedback from you tonight, come back with a final document. We'll meet probably one more time with the Economic Development Committee to make sure they're on board with this. So far, I think they are, and I'll let those council members who are at the meeting speak to that. December 9th, we'd ask for a final approval on it. Then we're going to launch it by the end of the year, and then use the month of January to solicit it. My goal would be to send it out in as far or wide as possible. The Journal of Commerce, we'd send it to Hebert, we'd send it to developers, we'd send it to real estate brokers, we'd send it to other individuals that you may know or somebody else might know. We'll get it out as far as possible to see what kind of response we get. We've already gotten at least 3 people coming in and talk to us now. We've gotten at least 2 developers that have been here on site and looked at it. We're going to have a meeting tomorrow afternoon with another one who are interested. So we know that there's possibilities out there and people interested in looking at it and working with us. Now, ultimately, we'd like to come back toward the end of February 24th, with a recommendation to you. So that's kind of what our window of time is. Of course, we're into the holidays, right? So we know there's going to be a little bit of slowdown, and you know people are going to be distracted into the holiday spirit. So we're really going to focus into January to get it done. So I think the key decision that I'd be looking for tonight was that you agree or disagree with our approach. If you disagree, let me know. We'll go back and compound out another one. That's important that you understand what we're trying to do and you think it's okay, at least at this next step. At the end of the day, but I keep saying that because we will get to a point where you're going to have another set of decisions. If you're uncomfortable with it, that uncomfortable sense of it could still be there. We should address it. And it may not work. These are very unique kinds of structures, I think. If we were business to business, it would be different, right? We'd have a different kind of relationship, business to business. Government to business is a little bit more tricky to work with. I need some direction on expanding the committee a bit. as I mentioned. We need some direction on supporting Hebert. I think that's a critical part for me. I need to have somebody who's going to be able to be our go-to person. Let's say, for example, if we have three developers or three individuals or three firms that we think are the highest qualified responders, we can give that information to Jim Hebert. He's got capacities that we don't have to research who those people are, what they can do, or what they can't do, or whether they're being truthful with us about what they can and can't do. So there's some other benefits to having him in the game with us. And I guess long term, we need to know if this is the direction you ultimately want to go with that project. Now, I will tell you, and you look at the very top, it says Gateway Parcel and the Old City Hall site. My opinion is we should include the Old City Hall site. There's no reason not to include it. There's no extra cost. We had one developer talk to us last week who said, well, the Old City Hall site's too small. How do you feel about developing the whole downtown? I don't know. How do we feel about that? So they're thinking way beyond where I was thinking about the Old City Hall site. And they may have capacities, they may have a vision that you might like. So I'm including the Old City Hall as well in this. And of course, as we go forward, that's all going to be negotiable, and it may or may not be something that you want to work on. It may not be feasible, but I wanted to include it as an opportunity for now. So my recommendation is to do an RFQ, expand the Economic Development Committee, and to have Gene Hebert on our team. So that's the end of my presentation. I kind of rushed through some of it, but I think I hit the high points for you. Yes, sir.
Sorry. I've been the head of the Economic Development Committee for 2 years, and this is the first time I see a real hope. And it's a really good deal. And this request for qualifications, it took me a minute or two to get my hands wrapped around it. And then when we, after the Hebert Report and everything that we learned from that, I understand that this is an opportunity for us to control the development. Otherwise, if we just sold the land, it could lay fallow for years. We could have a great big hole out here in the middle of nothing with a dust pile. This is our opportunity to partner with someone, and it's almost like a business-to-business relationship. It's about as close as you can get. And then we can go forward with a planned development of that property, which benefits the city greatly. And I think it's really cool, and I think we need to engage Hebert in this because he has already brought us, what, two or three more than viable prospects. He's doing a great job for us, and he's not being paid for it currently, and what he's asked for is very minimal. He got his fee for these other projects, but now he's asking for, $1,000 a month for 12 or 13 months. That's relatively insignificant what it could bring us, and I really highly recommend that we do that. I think Bonnie probably has come to understand what we're talking about.
I would agree.
And I think we're both very enthusiastic about it. And I really appreciate your leadership on this because we had, until Hebert come, and even though he came before and then it worked, we were kind of at a standstill. And this is really the first positive project I've ever seen in the city of Blaine. And I really think this will work. And I have run large businesses. And as you well know, and I think this is a good deal. It's a good deal for the city. I think we need the leadership and the contacts that Hebert brings us. He's already brought us people that we would never have talked to. And, I mean, I wouldn't mention the people that in the open right now, but he's brought us good things. And I don't think we can go wrong with you.
I just want to make a when you say the city hall site, including that in it, included in that is the police department and the library and the skate park property that we own, that whole area. That would all be included, correct?
Yes, and with the intention of replacing the library and the police building.
Right, exactly.
So we just wanted to clear. You wouldn't lose those uses. They'd be reconfigured in new facilities is how I vision it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So going back to your point, though, about the deal. So the value that we bring to the table is expert knowledge of the land use. Michael's expert at that, how to make those things work. We also bring value in the land. So that normally you sell the land, you get the proceeds of the sale value, $5 million or $6 million or whatever. That's your capacity. That's what you're bringing. So you may not see in hand $5 or $6 million, but you might see the development that you want. You're going to have to pay for this in some fashion. So that becomes your economic tool to help this project move forward. Same with the land and the buildings at the old City Hall site. So that's how you pay for this. Just so you understand, you know, that we're going to come forward and we're going to have a contract. It's going to be as clear as we can possibly make it with time frames and deliverables and expected outcomes. And they're going to come back to us and say, we can do all this. It's going to cost you $2 million or some number. That's what I expect. It's not going to be free. So their value could be the $2 million, or they're the developer themselves, and they say, we want you to discount this thing a couple million dollars, or whatever that might be. And you're going to have to make findings that this is in the best and highest interest of the citizens of the city to do that, because we can't just give away city assets, right? So that will be a big part of our conversation. We'll have to spend time with you clarifying that. That makes sense to do, and the citizens need to be engaged. We'll probably have public hearings to let people voice their opinions about that. But that's our skin in the game, is that value.
Further comments? Clark?
When you say value, that is the skin in the game, and that gives us a measure of control into the future that we don't have. If we just sell the land, we're out of it. This way we're involved as a partner. This is, as I understand from you and from Hebert, this is a relatively new concept in government and land, and I think it's a really great idea, and I think it could benefit all of us very well. It gives us some control. We could get the kind of development we want in this town, not just a truck stop or just this or this, that, or whatever. It could give us a very well-balanced thing into the future, and I'm really quite excited about it. So yes. I highly recommend we pay him. And
Dennis first, then Charlie.
I'll take direction from the council.
Shirley?
We talked about not selling the land, but it seemed like we've made some decisions and taken and borrowed money and things like that with the idea that we were going to sell some of the land to pay back loans and stuff that we made. We've done this in the last few years, and I'm wondering how that is going to factor into this type of.
So the question was, you know, what's left on the table to pay back the debt we've incurred? I think there's about over $400,000 we borrowed. We have to pay all that back. That all is part of this formula that we have to bring forward to the public. Full disclosure on this is critical, I think, for the public to buy into an idea that it's in their interest to go along with the program. So all of that has to be paid back. I certainly would be very disappointed at the end of this process that we didn't. The pie doesn't get larger. I mean, that would be a massive error on all of our parts if that were to happen. So, paying back those loans is critical. And in fact, I think in Raven's presentation, she shows those loans being paid back in 2017-18. So we're anticipating that's going to happen. So one last thing I want to mention. I was just looking through my list of things that are on my handout. It's my expectation as we go through that this is, if the partnership is really an economic development partnership, that we look beyond the borders of the Gateway property. You know, we have a property that Michael's been working on for years called the Klein property just to the south. They want to sell their lands. They've got some improvements that they want to make. They're looking forward to doing that. They're our partner in my mind relative to this overall project. We're certainly not going to sell their property. But I would include their stuff in our documentation to show the world what's happening in Blaine so they can see that the city has an interest through this process of looking at it much in a larger sense. We're not just going to focus narrowly on what we're trying to accomplish. It's really what the city's trying to accomplish. So we're trying to look broadly. And that includes some of the work that's been done with the storm drainage system, you know, the regional pond, as well as some of the wetland banking mitigation that we have talked about.
Okay, so are there further questions or comments to come? We need some sort of a motion.
So there's three motions, I think, or you can wrap them into one. So one is the expansion of the committee, and I think I've heard a recommendation to go to the neighborhoods, but I'll take
okay, let's
you'd like.
Deal with it one by one then. Okay. Do we hear a motion to expand the committee?
Second. I can't hear you, Charlie.
Is your microphone
that's
on?
That's because it wasn't Charlie.
Is that the how
it's on now?
I move we expand the committee. The numbers to be determined.
Second. My only problem with that is it could get unwieldy. We've already got, what?
Six or seven.
Let's get a motion on the floor and then discuss it.
Second.
We've got a second.
It's been moved and seconded. Charlie, I'm sorry, Clark.
What?
Would you like to speak to the motion?
Yes, now? I would. I mean, if we're going to have 20 people, that's too many.
Okay.
I mean, it could get ridiculous because, I mean, it could just become one big argument session. I think we need to be aggressive and progressive and headed in a direction. And if you get too many voices, it's going to be limited. I just can't see that. And I don't mind other voices, but I just can't see it getting out of control.
Rather than set a specific number, can we leave it to the discretion of the city manager?
Sure. My recommendation in the documents is, you know, 10 to 12. I agree with you.
That's fine.
I think it's too large.
We actually talked about it. That's fine.
Okay, so any further discussion? Shall we vote on
a little bit.
Just a little bit. The makeup of the present committee is right now there are two or three council people, and there are two real estate dealers.
Right.
There is one business owner, two business owners. And that's it?
No.
Who else?
Three.
A dentist. Okay. Two business owners, two real estate people, and three councilmen.
Yes, that's correct. Then we didn't have the dentist. You're right.
Further comments or questions?
So I would make just my recommendation then, listening to your comments. We would find a couple more, two or three more citizens at large. And if you have names of people that you think aren't part of that group that you just talked about, let me know and we'll just talk to some people and see if they're interested. Yeah. There could be people in the audience that might be interested even tonight. That's
further
all
comments, questions? Shall we vote on this motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0.
So the next one then is moving forward, at least at this juncture, with the RFQ, request for qualifications, with the public-private partnership concept embedded in it.
Also move.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there any discussion? Seeing none, are you?
No.
Seeing none, shall we vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0.
Thank you. And the last one then is to have a contract with Jim Hebert. I'd say for December this year, probably through the end of next year, so it's going to be 13 months.
I move that we extend his contract at $1,000 a month for 13 months.
Do we have a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
Question.
Is that contract going to indicate what his duties are, responsibilities?
Absolutely. Yeah, there'll be a list of things that we'd like for him to do. And thank you for also, I was thinking as you were talking, we would recommend using some council contingency. If you recall, at the mid-year, we had some money set aside. It was my intention when we talked about that to utilize those funds for something like this. So that's how we would go about paying for it. But absolutely, there'd be a deliverable. He's going to, there's certain things he has to do for us.
Okay.
Charlie?
That answers my question.
Further comments, questions? Shall we vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0.
Thank you very much, Council. We'll get to work.
Okay, so that concludes the Council action items. Now we move to Commission, Committee, and Board reports. Starting off with the Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee. Clark?
What's that?
Would you like to report
you
on
just
the...
heard my whole
okay.
You just heard my whole presentation.
Moving right along.
You did a wonderful job.
We got the hint.
Thank you, Dave.
Moving right along. Blaine Tourism and Advisory Committee. Mr. Lawrence.
No report.
Countywide Economic Development. Mr. Lawrence. Boys and Girls Club, Mr. Lawrence.
We heard that earlier, their request for more funding.
Blaine Chamber of Commerce.
No report.
RED Loan Committee.
Had a couple of inquiries, but no
application. Just like phone, in, but no apps.
Yes.
Okay.
WTA Board. We are in the final weeks of selecting a new general manager to replace Richard Walsh. Drayton Harbor Shellfish. Library Committee.
They're having their December book sale coming up. I think it's the first week of December.
Thank you. Senior Center Liaison. Dennis?
On Thanksgiving Day, they're serving dinner, the American Legion Post 86, and it's from 11 to 4 for anyone. And the center's preparing their December bazaar. I think it's, again, about the first week.
Thank you. Planning Commission, Mr. Jones?
The Planning Commission is in the midst of a public hearing related to the resort Semiahmoo Master Plan update, and that will continue on December 5th at 7 p.m. If anyone is interested in testifying, they should come to the Commission to be heard. And then as far as the Park and Cemetery Board goes, sir, I have nothing at this time.
Thank you. The Chief is not here. Small Cities Caucus, Mr. Wilbrecht?
No report.
Whatcom Council of Governments. I attended that, but there was nothing of general interest. And the North Whatcom Fire Update, Chief Hollander?
Chief Council, I shared with you our chief's report for the month of November. That was all our activities throughout the Any questions?
Congratulations. You cut 2 minutes off the semi-annual response time.
Okay, it's on to... department reports, Public Works.
Well, actually, the presentation actually covered a couple of things that I was going to highlight. One being the TIB funding that we found out about Friday for Mitchell Avenue. That's $554,167, or 95% of the project cost. So we're very excited about that. Last week we had two ribbon cuttings on two TIB projects, one on Boblett and the other on 8th Street. We were thinking on 8th Street because we had to carry over the paving into the second year that we might have needed to dip into that bond money, and we were able to fund that with our existing maintenance costs. So I'm really proud of our crew for keeping that price down and affordable. As you know, we awarded the waterproofing job tonight. We also opened bids on Friday for the LED streetlight conversions. This is the component of the streetlight conversion that TIB is going to fund, and it also will set the standard for whatever the ESCO is going to do to complete. So, as an example, if Cree Model 123 was the low bid and met all the requirements, we would then tell JCI, we want Cree 123. You know, so we're not going to have different types of street lights for our crews to maintain. You know, similar parts and all that good stuff. The bid documents and what they had to submit with the proposal was quite dense. So we will bring that for award at the next meeting, so we have more time for our engineers to review those documents. Other than that, we're kind of getting close to the finish line, negotiating a contract with Department of Ecology for the Cane Creek work that they're going to fund. That's $250,000 grant. That also funds for us a sewer camera that we'll be able to use ongoing after that work is done. And then just a quick reminder to Councilman Hawkins about our annual meeting with Birch Bay Water and Sewer the 4th of December at 10 a.m. at Public Works. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. Next, the community development.
It's actually interesting.
Just a couple items, yeah. Council. The docket for 2014 comprehensive plan update is due at the end of December, and then I present that to you early in January. And at this point, there are only two items that I expect will be on that. One is an update of the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan to remove Cannery Hill and the West Semiahmoo District, as was requested to be docketed by the Planning Commission. And after some recent discussion with the Planning Commission, I do think that they're going to recommend that that include a general update as it relates to the uplands area of Semiahmoo, just to bring the plan current so that it speaks to what was actually constructed rather than speaks to what was proposed, which in some instances is fairly different than what was actually constructed in some of the neighborhoods. So that's one item. And then the other item is very all-encompassing. It would be to docket the 2016 Comprehensive Plan update. So that would dabble in essentially all aspects of the comp plan. We would, though, expect to work on land use first and then traffic right after some of the land use decisions are made. And at the same time, the Park and Cemetery Board will be working on updating the parks element, which is encompassed in our park master plan. So if you have other items, for instance, if you thought that we should really look at public facilities this coming year, which might wait a year or two, because land use is sort of the first item you deal with, you'd need to let me know that, and I can bring a resolution forward that council could consider in December. So basically, I'm just letting you know what you'll see in January is just the overall comp plan update and the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan update to remove Cannery Hill and the West Semiahmoo District. And then the other item I wanted to bring your attention to was the joint study session for the council and the Park and Cemetery Board, which is coming up on December 16th at 5:30 p.m. Park and Cemetery Board has been putting together an agenda for that, and they'd like to work to discuss with you some of the recent accomplishments and then talk about funding, marine park erosion and exposure of some of the landfill there, employee resources, and then park programming, events and activities in the parks. So if there are other items that individually you'd like to see on that agenda, if you could let me know, that would be great, so we can just be aware of that up front and have it all included on the agenda for that meeting. What they'd like to do is just generally get some feedback and discussion with you.
Is that 5:30?
Yes.
5:30 on
the
16th.
That's a non-council night, right?
Yes, it's a non-council night.
Further comments, questions?
Applications for park board received any? I saw an ad in the paper.
There's an ad in the paper for park board positions. Sherry, is there an ad running currently?
We're running it every few weeks just to keep the cost down.
Yes. And then one other item, it only really relates to two council members, but there's an upcoming meeting for the GMA group. Councilors Olson and Anya typically go to that meeting. So I'll be sending you out the agenda, so keep an eye out in your emails for that.
Okay. What's the date of that?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I'm not sitting in front of my computer. It's the 3rd, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. And it's at the Lummi Administrative Center, which is on Quiner Road. Mm-hmm. When you drive down Quiner Road, it's on the south side. You can't miss it. Big, beautiful new facility. But don't go to the old facility. Mm-hmm. So just look for the new one.
Mr. City Manager?
Just a brief report. I'll be out of the area during the Thanksgiving holiday, and I'll assign someone to be the acting city manager, and I want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Okay, the 4th item is the calendar. There's no need to read each of the items, is there?
Could I come up?
Yes.
Sorry. On December 9th, I'm going to be bringing forward to the council a resolution setting the time and dates for the council meetings for 2014. I just wanted to confirm if you want the times to be at 6 o'clock.
Do we see any discussion on that? She's asking if meeting at 6 o'clock for the coming year would be acceptable.
Fine with me.
I see no objection.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, do we have any unfinished business? Seeing none, do we have any new business? Mr. Lawrenson.
My question's for Raven. Raven, with winter upon us, and the West going, what is the city's plan for snow removal if we get it? We don't get it every year. Are we prepared and ready for that?
Yes, sir. We have been getting our plows out and oiling them and putting them on the different trucks, and we're ready for winter, sir.
Part of the reason I asked that, in years past, and I think a lot of that was before your time, the city's response has been poor. A lot of the citizens and the businesses have been very unhappy with it. One of the problems we find when they're plowing, they don't start from the curb and work in, and so what they end up doing is blocking all the personal vehicles or potential business people.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that will be taken a look at.
I'll talk to our foreman about that. Right.
Thank you.
Further new business? Seeing no further new business, I declare this session adjourned.